shotglassdigital.com. Rebel Force Radio is brought to you in part by Little Debbie Snacks and their new Cosmic Cupcakes. To learn more, go to littledebbie.com/cosmic cupcakes. With movies, gaming, books, comics, and collecting, a Little Debbie snack makes everything a little sweeter. Little Debbie, official snack of the galaxy.
DorksideToys.com. For the latest Star Wars action figures, Marvel, G.I. Joe, and more, visit DorksideToys.com.
A small rebel force has penetrated the shield and landed on Endor.
This is where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Star Wars number one.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
I don't even know if I remember how I got the big Death Star home on the airplane. It was a long time ago now, but we've been asked to tell the tale, and tell it we will. This week on Rebel Force Radio, that's right, you're in the right place for Star Wars chatter, news, reviews, rumors, spoilers, all of the above. We've got it right here for this week's show, September 5th, 2014. So glad you could be with us, and we are happy to be back with you once again. And with me, as always, the ever-present, my good friend and yours, from Chicago, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. Wowie, wow, wow. Can you believe it's been a month since our big trip out to Lucasfilm headquarters, Skywalker Ranch, and of course, the amazing Rancho Obi-Wan.
Oh, I can't believe it. No, it goes so fast. You know, when you're on vacation, in one sense, it feels like you just got there. In another sense, it feels like you've been there your whole life. It's such a strange, when you get out of your routine, it's such a strange thing psychologically. But what a great place to feel like you've been forever. Rancho Obi-Wan and the beautiful Bay Area. It was fantastic. It was fantastic. But you know what? It wasn't all roses and scenery, right? There's something kind of insidious about the gift that I got from our good friend Dave Filoni. I just couldn't help, Jim, as delighted as I was to finally have that amazing Revenge of the Jedi Death Star set. So for those of you who haven't listened to the show recently, when Jim and I visited the folks at Lucasfilm, and this is at the Presidio at the Letterman Digital Art Center. Am I saying that right? LDAC?
You got it.
Call it. And Dave Filoni greeted us there and had a couple of gifts and fantastic items, you know, from Dave's. And that's what made it even more special. Not only were these cool Star Wars collectibles, but we know that they were from the collection of Dave Filoni and probably sat, you know, in his office as he was making cool Star Wars stuff.
Right.
And so what he gave me was this, that ginormous set of, gosh, what is there? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's like 10 action figures on cards and plus the 2 minifigs. This came out a couple years ago for the 30th anniversary of Return of the Jedi. This was that big Death Star set of action figures. So it was all these figures. They were in this huge Death Star cardboard case, and it was like, it's as big as me, you know? I mean, truly, it's almost as tall as I am, this thing. And Jim, is like I said, as great of a gift as it was, there's a part of me now looking back that thinks that Dave really knew what he was doing, saddling me with this thing.
Yeah, because the trick was getting it back home. And it is big. I'd say it's about 2 feet tall, maybe even taller. And it's a
like 3.5 feet tall.
Wow, really? That
yeah,
big?
Yeah.
It's a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive from a couple years ago. Highly sought after, highly collectible. And Dave gave it off to you. I think there was a smirk, like, it's going to be funny to watch this guy get it home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Isn't that fun? Get that home. Yeah. Get home to Cleveland.
Dave gave me a Plo Koon Sideshow Toys action figure, you know, the large
size. The 12-inch, which I love because if for the life of me, as wonderful as the Star Wars room is there in the Mac house, I've always thought that you needed at least one of those amazing Sideshow 12-inch figures. You got no Sideshow stuff in there.
No Sideshow. So to get the Plo Koon from Dave, and like you said, directly from his office, I'm sure he's got tons of them, but still it was, you know, Dave Filoni's favorite character and he gave it to me. There's something symbolic about that. And also something great about it because it easily fits into a shopping bag and fits right underneath your seat.
Yeah. Not so much with me. And you know, in the whole time as we're traveling, I'm bragging to Jimmy. I'm like, Joe, I can't believe you checked bags. I'll check bags. That's for suckers. I carry everything on. And I was bragging about how efficient I was, right? I had everything, you know, in my new little suitcase. And so then I get this thing. And it wouldn't have been so bad had we not been running late on top of it on the way home.
There was a problem getting to SFO, the San Francisco airport. I think it comes from the fact that while leaving Rancho Obi-Wan, I decided to jump on the 101 North, which was taking us toward the Redwood Forest and not necessarily downtown San Francisco. So about 15 minutes into our trek, we realized that turnaround, and now we had time to make up. So Jason got to experience the Full Metal Jacket Jimmy Mack driving experience.
Oh, yeah, and I don't think we really talked about that when we did our initial recap of the trip. You picture the worst roller coaster you've ever been on, the most bumpy, nauseating roller coaster you've been on, notch it up about 12 points, and that was Jimmy Mack driving through the hills of San Francisco. It was just, and I was in the front passenger seat, and I was getting car sick.
While we drive around downtown San Fran, it's almost like a 70s cop show, where we hit the top of the hill, and we keep sailing.
No, I mean, I swear, that's hardly an exaggeration. That's what it was like.
The only thing that was missing was the guitar with the wah-wah pedal. So, yeah, we did have an experience driving through San Fran.
And how about that rental cart location, which was like two exits further than the airport, right?
Yeah, we made the big mistake of pulling into the airport to return the car, not realizing that we actually had to drive beyond the airport to return the car. So that ate up even more time.
Then you had to get on the tram to get back
to
the
airport. Oh, by the way, before we get that far, I have to tell you this because you don't know this. But when we got to the rental drop-off, we just jumped out of the car, left the keys in the car, grabbed our bags, and split. We didn't talk to anyone. We didn't wait for a receipt or anything.
But that's the Jimmy Mack special. That's how you are in hotels. That's how you are everywhere. You're like a thief in the night. Like you were never there.
It's like,
you
here's
just
your
leave.
Here's
no
your
trace.
Here's your stuff. We gone.
Yeah.
But about 2 days later, Wendy called me at work saying, hey, listen, they're ringing the phone off the hook here at home. They're saying you didn't return your car at the airport.
Are you serious?
I'm like, well, what do you think? I carried it on? So I had to call them back and explain to them the error in their ways. I said, just look for the car that no one returned, and that's the one I took.
Right. It would, right. Oh, my God.
Of course, we circumvented the system when we took the car in the first place. I think we went out the employee exit. And so no one knew what kind of car we had. No one, you know what? For all I knew, at any given moment during this trip to San Francisco, we could have been pulled over by San Fran's finest.
Yeah. I don't think we ever legally took possession of that vehicle.
I don't think we did.
At any point. We didn't legally.
We're like Jawas. We are like Jawas.
And it had that keyless start, too, you know? So it's like, well, anyway, what was making this kind of stressful is the fact that I had a connecting flight. So I had a one-hour layover. So we were flying from San Francisco to Chicago, and then I had a one-hour layover to get from Chicago to Akron, Canton. And so time was of the essence. I was worried that we were going to miss this flight leaving San Francisco. So we returned the car. I'm running as fast as I can. I've got two bags slung over me. Plus, I'm carrying this Death Star. And I have to kind of hold it. If you can imagine, I've got my arm almost straight out to the side. Because if I'm holding it close to me, I'm like hitting it, you know, with my feet and my legs as I'm running. So I'm holding this thing out to the side.
Following you as we ran down toward the gates, it almost appeared like there was an aerodynamic effect starting to happen with you in this thing, where it was actually beginning to lift you up off the ground like a hang glider.
I don't doubt it. I mean, at one, this is the thing. So, like, you know, we're on this trip together through thick or thin, and then all of a sudden, it hit me like, I don't know about him, but I'm not missing this flight.
Yeah, it became every man for himself. I'm just like, just go, because I wanted to check the bags. Now, of course, once we got down to the gates and we saw the line at TSA, I realized there's no time to check the bag. The reason I needed to check the bag is because I had a nice bottle of wine from Skywalker Ranch. And you cannot bring bottles of wine. Oh, my God. You cannot bring bottles of wine onto the plane. You have to check your bag. So I stood there at security and held out a bottle of wine from the ranch itself and dropped it right into the garbage can. Oh. And I'm like, don't look back. Don't ever look back, Annie.
You know, you really should have cracked that open and just taken
it. Just start chugging it.
Yeah, just
right there in front of the security guard.
You're not getting this, you bastards.
I didn't want to, because I was able to smooth talk the TSA into letting us circumvent the line and get through the metal detector and security check so we could run to our gate. I thought it was a lost cause.
I thought it was a lost cause, too, because you had to give up your bounty. I thought I was going to have to give up my bounty with the Death Star. And Jim, that's right. I mean, we gave them our sob story. We said we've got 10 minutes to get to our flight. Please, is there anything you can do for us? You know what? And to their credit, they were fantastic.
They were great.
I don't know about how National Security would feel about this, but they were great. And they let us go to the head of the line. So I get up there with this Death Star. And just imagine the look on the face of the TSA agents.
Oh, I saw several looks in your wake.
Yeah,
believe me.
Yeah. Because at first, I'm just like, I'm just going to play it cool. I'm just going to throw it up there on that table like it's nothing. You know, the conveyor belt and the scanner. And I throw it up there. And immediately I realize it's not going to fit through the little, you know, compartment where the scanner is, right, on the conveyor belt. So I take it off. And I thought, well, if they can take the little, you know, handheld scanner and scan me and do whatever they got to do, then they can do that with the Death Star. Maybe I can take the Death Star in that tube, in the transporter where they do the X-ray. So at first I start walking with that. And the guy's like, no, hold on. What's this?
What the?
Yeah. And
did Filoni, he probably's like, did Filoni give you this?
Well, I had this feeling like Dave was watching from afar. Like he was just like, you know, up on the escalator. He was going, look at this. That's the image I had. Like that was the whole reason for the gift. It's just to see if he could totally mess with me. So, so I said, well, you know, this was a gift, and you should have checked this back there. I know, but you can see, I don't want it to get beat up. It's a collectible, and he's just rolling his eyes. You know, you've seen that look before.
Yeah.
So I said, is there anything, you know, can you help me out? And so he goes and he, you know, does the blip, 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 blip. And it was going off. So they're obviously in these action figures, there's metal somewhere. They're setting this thing off.
Hmm.
And he's looking and he's like, and he, I was just enough of a nuisance. But I think a harmless nuisance. He realized a harmless nuisance that he's just like, just get out of my face. Just here. Take your Star Wars collectible and just get out of here.
He's a Lord of the Rings fan.
Yeah. So, but hey, you know what? Squeaky wheel sometimes. So they let me through. But then I realized that was just part of it. Now I have to sweet talk the stewardess into not making me check this thing and trying to stow it away. And I thought, oh, great. You know, they have those closets, you know, right as you board the plane, as soon as you make that turn, they usually have those closets right by where like the pilot hangs up his coat and stuff or whatever. And so this plane, for whatever reason, didn't have those compartments, or they were all full or something.
Yeah, we were on a little 757. It was not a very big
Yeah,
car.
Right. It wasn't all that spacious. But she did find some room behind first class, behind this dude's seat. And this guy was pretty cool. He was like, oh, Star Wars, man, all right. You know, and he kind of gave me the thumbs up as we stowed this away behind his chair.
You missed what was going on behind you.
Oh, no.
This guy sitting in the front row in first class, he's like, I hear this. What's this? Space? Star Wars? And he looks at me and he rolls his eyes. I look down at him. I go, oh, my God, it's Walter Murch. I swear to God, I am convinced that was Walter Murch sitting in the front row of first class on our flight back. I swear to God, I was looking online for, like, is Walter Murch in Chicago? Where maybe he was catching a connecting flight somewhere. I don't know. I haven't been able to track the man's whereabouts. I was so stunned by, you know, looking down and seeing him sitting there. I was just shocked. Walter Murch, of course, is the godfather of sound design and film. He worked with George Lucas on THX 1138 and American Graffiti. Obviously, his influence has been felt upon Lucasfilm over the decades. And
he also directed an episode of The Clone Wars.
General Krell episode.
That's right.
Darkness on Umbara. He is, somebody who has a massive filmmaking pedigree, and I think it caught his attention.
I'm assuming. Space?
I swear to
Star
God.
Star Wars?
He's like, space. Star Wars. And he looked at me, and he kind of like, kind of made a curmudgeon-y look, and I was just like, I'm just like, I didn't even tell you this on a flight because I thought there would be a whole freak out scene with both of us storming first class, but I'm like, that's Walter Murch. That's...
They tell you, you know, in today's age of, you know, I mean, terrorism and all that stuff, that you don't want to be like making a scene or you don't want to be conspicuous. I don't think we could have been more conspicuous.
I'm dropping bottles of wine off in garbage cans. You're bringing
$30 bottles of wine. You're dropping in the trash can. Yeah, I'm carrying 15 action figures with me. And it was ridiculous. And then we did manage to make our flight. That was the good news. The bad news is we sat on the tarmac for almost an hour.
Well, the only reason we made our flight was because our flight was delayed. If our flight took off when it was supposed to, we were dead ducks, man. We were dead ducks.
Yeah, Jim, I just kept looking back at Jim. Like, it was like, what's that movie? It's in Star Trek. You know, in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, when the Enterprise at the end is trying to blast away from the Genesis as it's ready to explode, and he looks and he's like, we're not going to make it, are we? And I kind of looked at Jim as we're on that tram, and he keeps looking at his watch and looking at his itinerary on his phone and then looking at his watch, and it's like, we're not going to make it, are we? We're trying to speed away to that plane. Luckily, as he said, the plane was delayed. We got on, but then we sat for an hour on the tarmac, which caused my connecting flight for me to miss my connecting flight in Chicago to Akron Canton. And it was just,
it was a whole nother thing.
It was a whole other story. Yeah. But the bottom line is, and the most important thing is, I beat you, Filoni. I have that thing. It is here. It is in my collection. Woo! In the Palatial Rebel Force Radio Studios. And, It's not too much worse for the wear, I got to say.
It's cool. I mean, it's a great
piece. The band fell off. I'm running to catch, you know, Jim, this is when I thought I had hope of catching that connecting flight. And I'm running my, you know what, off. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I look down in this, the nice band that goes around this Death Star that has the Revenge of the Jedi logo fell off.
Oh, no.
What do I do? Miss my flight or go back?
You went back.
I went back.
Yes. Yes.
I went back. I didn't want to have like part of a collectible.
No. Good for you. I'm happy.
So anyway, but I did make it home.
Well, I want to thank everyone who brought that to our attention. We did mean to tell this story, but we ran out of time and then just forgot about it last week. So thanks to everyone who reached out to us, via email and social networking. C.W. Walker on Twitter said, hey, Rebel Force Radio, we still did not find out how Jason Swank got his revenge Death Star home on the plane. So now you guys know.
Now I do. Now we do.
This is
all
a great
right,
trip.
Let's get to some news.
Let's do it.
Some news.
Yes.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's
good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
Star Wars Ankle Gate. Ow! 2014.
I got a bad feeling about this.
All right, I'm thinking and hoping that this is our final Ankle Gate update, at least for Star Wars Episode 7. Who knows what's going to happen with Episode 8, but the word is, Jim, I don't know, how official is this? Have we heard from official channels yet that Harrison Ford is back on the set, and or rather that Episode 7 has resumed shooting after the injury? We know that there was a two-week period where the film completely shut down, and that was several weeks after the initial injury, which, by the way, took place on June 12th. This shutdown happened earlier in the month of August. But what do we have in terms of actual official confirmation, or is this just, you know, the media going with the story?
Well, I definitely think that the only confirmation you need is from the massive amount of crew that is working at the sets of Pinewood Studios, and there has been plenty of confirmation coming out of there, both publicly and privately, that indicates that shooting has resumed and that core cast members like Harrison Ford are back on the set, and Star Wars Episode 7 is back in front of the cameras.
Now, Harrison's his agent or somebody, his rep, whoever that is, his PR person said that he hasn't started shooting his own scenes, but will soon. Now, we know that he was in the process of shooting some scenes, so we're not saying that, or they're not suggesting that he hadn't shot anything for the film yet, but just since his return. Various appearances that he's made. He was at the red carpet for The Expendables 3. I have yet to see Expendables 1 or 2, but anyway, he was walking the red carpet for that. He also was seen online with the supporting the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge with his own entry, and we'll be talking about that a little bit later in the program. But so he's been making the rounds. Jim, we saw some photos a couple weeks ago we talked about on the show of him sans cast, sans peg leg, whatever that contraption was called. But you know what? I'm not going to knock it, because I think that he owes a lot of his recovery probably due to that, whatever that futuristic crutch is that they suited him up with. Plus, Calista was there to ease his suffering in London, and then his convalescence in the United States. And he was flying in a helicopter at one point too. He was,
well, he has a private jet that he flies in and out of Santa Monica Airport, and
he flies himself.
He's that right, kind of guy. He really is that nerf-herder, scruffy looking pilot. But it's great news about Harrison. He was seen, yeah, as you say, Jason. Media spotted him on the red carpet for The Expendables 3, and he was walking by, and most people noticed that he wasn't limping at all. He did his bucket challenge video with no cast, no wrapping around his ankle or his leg, anything visibly noticeable as far as a cast would go or anything. So it looks like Harrison's definitely back in the saddle. I even saw him in his hometown, where he currently lives, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And apparently there's an amusement park there that features this giant slide that's like hundreds of feet high up in the air. And
yeah,
they showed him up there with his family having a good old time just a mere few days before he was set to fly back to London to resume filming at Pinewood. So it looks like Harrison is fully recovered, and I don't think we'll be doing Ankle Gate updates any further.
Star Wars Ankle Gate. Ow! 2014.
I got a bad feeling about this.
It's okay. We have a good feeling about it.
Yes. I got a good feeling about a new cast member added to the roster for Episode 7. And just in case you thought that the names couldn't get any more strange, no offense, we've got actor Miltos Geronimo, who is from Game of Thrones. And I'm a little out of it because I don't watch Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. So that's now two actors from the hit series, and now in a Star Wars Episode 7. Now,
it is important to keep in mind that Lucasfilm has yet to confirm the casting of Geronimo, but it's coming from very reliable sources that he's indeed going to have a role. There's speculation that he will most likely be wielding a lightsaber, as he's known for his sword play. And but some are saying that it's probably going to be a minor role. And Jim, you know, this happens a lot. I think the famous example is Rick Olier, anyone who was one of the first characters that we saw both in action figure form and as a trading card stuck into an issue of Star Wars Insider magazine. And it just seemed like his face was everywhere. And we thought, wow, he's going to be such a cool character. He's going to be a lead star or whatever. And, you know, that he's Rick Olier. So that happens a lot in Star Wars, where a big deal is made out of the casting of a certain actor, and the reality is they might only be on screen for a couple minutes.
Of course, but this is the first act of three, so maybe we might be seeing Miltos go the Sam Jackson route and be featured just a little bit in the beginning and more so as the trilogy moves forward. He definitely is an accomplished swordsman, at least as far as stage fighting goes. He plays a character on Game of Thrones, Cyril Farrell, who definitely displays his extensive experience as far as swordplay goes. And we actually have a little clip from Game of Thrones just to hear what Milto sounds like.
We do.
Oh, you didn't get that?
No, I got it. It's right here. Just kidding.
Bastard. Are you men or snakes that you would threaten a child?
Get out of my way, little man.
I am Cyril Farrell.
Foreign bastard.
And you will be speaking to me with more respect.
You know, as I look at this cast list, I take that back. I think the names that we were struggling with, Jim, I just remember a few months ago on the program, there were a lot of names. Lupita's was one, Lupita Nyong'o, which we know how to pronounce that. But there were some that were rumored to be in the movie that had some really far out names that were hard for, you know, for at least for me to pronounce. But Miltos Jerolimu. Jerolimu is allegedly joined the cast. Joins Harrison Ford, Gwendolyn Christie, Carrie Fisher, Andy Serkis, Mark Hamill, Domhnall Gleeson, Adam Driver, Lupita Nyong'o, Kenny Baker, Oscar Isaac, Peter Mayhew, Max von Sydow, Anthony Daniels, Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, and many others.
Well, that's an exciting cast. When you run it down like that, that just is very exciting to hear all those
And don't
names.
Forget Pip Anderson.
Don't forget the Pip.
Right. Another guy who was, you know, probably cast because of his athletic ability. And he's the what do they call that? The
parkour.
The guy that runs. The
Parkour. Hey, you know what I'm thinking is there is a possibility that we might be seeing Miltos and Pip perhaps.
I keep thinking you're saying Miltos.
Miltos. Miltos. How do you say his name?
You know what? I think you're right. Miltos.
Miltos.
Miltos Jerolimu.
Miltos Jerolimu. So I think we'll be seeing Miltos, and we'll be seeing Pip. It's very possible that they might be going the Andy Serkis motion capture route.
Oh, you think?
It could be. It could be possible. It very well could be possible. Anything is possible in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But he's a cool. I like this actor, Miltos, and I think that getting a guy, again, I made the comparisons between Pip Anderson and Ray Park. I'm going to make them again between Miltos and Ray. The fact that what they're bringing physically to the screen is what's going to really define these characters much more so than, say, their actions or acting chops or things of that nature.
That's true. That's true. So they obviously, in addition to being great performers, they have a certain skill that is needed for the character or
right.
for the universe.
Yes.
That they're trying to depict. So that's good news. I don't consider that a spoiler. That's not a spoiler.
No, that's no spoiler.
No.
Who said it was a spoiler?
I'm not saying it's a spoiler. I am preventatively putting out there that is not a spoiler. So if I say it's not a spoiler, then it's not a spoiler.
Okay, not a spoiler.
Or does it work the other way? If I say it's not a spoiler, people are like,
Rebel Force Radio. Spoiler.
Yeah.
No, casting, I don't think, is really a spoiler.
No, no, casting's not a spoiler. Let me make that clear. In our in the RFR canon, casting is not a spoiler. And as we debuted last week, we like to fit our spoiler section into 15 minutes of unfettered, no holds barred. The chains are coming off, Jason. The chains are coming off we do our spoiler update, and that will be coming later in the show.
That's right. Just wait till we get our hands on the script. Yeah. It's gonna be, how are we going to do that in 15 minutes?
We'll just go through it page by page until 15 minutes. No, we won't be doing that. No, but no.
You know what? Somebody could tell me. I've got it right here. Just got to click on this link. And you have it. I wouldn't do that.
I don't think I would either. I don't know.
Look, I mean, there's a certain, let's be honest, there's a certain cross that Jimmy Mack and I must bear each and every week to bring you these spoilers if you choose to listen to the spoiler segment. But I would have to draw the line. I would have to say, no, this interferes with my rights as a fan. And I am a fan first and a podcaster second.
Now, have we considered about reading the novelization, which inevitably will be coming out a month before the release of the film?
See, this is what I did. And I know, Jim, you have a similar tale when it comes to the novelization of Empire Strikes Back.
Right, yes.
But I, when the Episode One novel came out, and I really wanted the, you know, they had different covers. There was an Anakin, a Padme, a Maul, and an Obi-Wan. And I, Obi-Wan going into the prequels, if I say this, it's going to sound like I don't like Ewan, and I do like Ewan. I was going through a big, you know, you have different characters that you like. You know, it's like when Dylan was younger and he used to have you talk to him when he was going through the house, you know, when he was kind of scared and in different parts of the house, and he wanted you to go with him. And he'd be like, who's your favorite Star Wars character today, Dad? And you would do that, right? It changes.
Yep. It changes all the time. By the way, let me tell you that was actually Michael, and Michael is 15 years old, and he still asks me every day for sake of tradition.
Oh, I thought that was Dill. No, it was Michael. Okay.
Today was Death Star Gunner.
Awesome. Good choice. I you know what? I learned from that, though, because my daughter is going through a phase right now where I'll say, honey, go upstairs and get your jammies on. No, I don't want to go up. Will you come up with me? Well, no, I don't want to come up with you. I'm doing this, A, so you'll get your jammies on, and B, that I'll have 5 minutes alone.
Right.
But what I've started to do is talk to her. Like, as she's, you're going up the stairs now. Oh, I bet you're turning into your room. Because, you know, they get kind of freaked out.
Exactly. Know? Yeah.
So. Anyway, my point is, you go through phases. And I was in a big Obi-Wan phase, old Ben phase, because that's the only Ben we knew going into the prequels, was old Ben. And so I was just really intrigued by the possibility of what Ewan was going to bring to the character. So I had to get that cover. Got that cover at Target, and then I bring it home. What was that, Jim? Maybe 3 weeks before the movie?
Oh, I'd say 3 weeks, a solid month. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it was about 3 or 4 weeks. And I thought to myself, okay, I'm just going to read the first chapter. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm not going to pick it up. So I pick up the book and I'm kind of laying there. I was in college at the time, and I remember exactly where I was, sitting on the couch in my college apartment, and I read the opening. And the opening, if you remember, the novelization of Episode One starts with Anakin on Tatooine, and he has that run-in with the Tusken Raider,
right?
With the broken leg,
not part of the film.
Not part of the film. And so I thought I was spoiling myself reading this. I'm like, oh, this is such a great opening scene. I can't believe I did that to myself. I'll only read one more chapter. So then I read, you know, the next chapter. And then I was like, wow, this is ridiculous. I got to put this away. So then I decided to read the last page. I read the last freaking page.
Who does that?
I don't know. I was just... I'm like, well, I've already, you know, ruined this for myself. So that's why when you say when I read it, I won't even allow myself to buy it.
Good.
I won't even allow myself to buy it until after I see the film. It's just too special. So, but if I remember right, you did something. You were standing in a bookstore flipping through the Empire novelization before you saw the movie?
Well, because we had heard rumors that Darth Vader reveals himself as Luke Skywalker's father. That had leaked, and it was being talked about on the school playground. So when I walked into Walden Books at the Deerbrook Mall in Deerfield, Illinois, and saw it for the very first time, Empire Strikes Back by Donald F. Glut, you know, this is the first time I was seeing that art, that incredible Gone with the Wind inspired poster art for Empire. And I just picked it up and I said, I have to know, is Darth Vader Luke Skywalker's father? And I flipped right through. I knew that it was a saber battle between Luke and Darth where that information was revealed. And I found it and I read it and I said, yes, it's true. And I bought the book and then read it. From I didn't look at the last page or anything
the whole
crazy
book?
Like
you,
that.
You read the whole book?
I did. I read the whole novel before I saw the film. But the biggest spoiler of all was after reading the book,
I don't think you read the whole book.
I read the whole thing. And I had it in the car at all times. Orthodontist trips, little league practice, you name it. And my mom was always really late picking me up from anything, so I needed something to kill the time. And, you know, after various after-school activities, I'd just be sitting there for half an hour after everyone had left waiting for my mom to pick me up.
So then what was the experience of seeing the movie like if you'd already basically read it?
But the biggest spoiler was, see, I didn't have the visual imagery. I conjured up, like, what Cloud City was like and what the carbon freezing chamber was like. And it was vastly different from what was finally up on screen, the kind of mental imagery I was conjuring up as I read this novelization. The thing that was the biggest spoiler was I walked into a Crown bookstore and saw the hardcover Empire Strikes Back storybook. And this was a few weeks before the film came out, and I grabbed it. I did not purchase this, but I did grab it, and I flipped through it, and I was like, oh, that's what that looks like. That's what that looks like. That's what that looks like. So the only big surprise for me when Empire finally opened was when Luke's hand got cut off, because to me in the novelization, it didn't really come across so clearly that Luke's hand was separated from his arm. It just sort of read like Vader – cut him badly. I didn't realize it was a full dismemberment, you know.
Just a flesh wound.
It's just a flesh wound. But no, it was it wasn't. That was a shocker to me. That was the big shocker of Empire for me, was Luke's hand getting chopped off.
So there were still surprises.
There was still that one surprise. And also, you know, the way that the chemistry between the characters on screen is something that's hard to replicate in the pages of a book. It when it all comes to life on the screen, There's a certain amount of satisfaction and fulfillment, and then there's also a certain amount of disappointment, because a lot of times what you come up with in your own imagination is vastly superior to what you see on the silver screen when you read a book before you finally see a movie. That's why a lot of people who have read the book before they see a movie often say, well, the book was better. You hear that a lot from a lot of people. So,
a good point. You know, are you saying that the book was actually better, or are you saying that the movie you played in your head was better?
Well,
it's a really good point.
You know, I'm being more general with that statement. I'm not really talking specifically about Empire, but I'm just talking about the dangers of reading a novel before you see the film, is the fact that basically you are setting yourself up for disappointment, because quite often, because of the fact your imagination is limitless, you often have a better story running through your head as you read the novel.
Yeah.
But then I've heard the other side of the coin, too. I was talking to Kyle about this recently, and he had told me about spoiling himself heavily before seeing the Phantom Menace, and how it really was a very satisfying experience to see the story come together, you know, as it was meant to be, even though he had all that information. It was really satisfying to see it all then come to life on screen. So there's, you know what? I really do think I'm going to spoil myself like crazy for this film. And then maybe I'll step back for the second episode, because everything will be set up then.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And there'll be more of a mystery. Right now, to me, it's hard to even define the mystery of the sequel trilogy at this point in time, because we have no direction as to where it could possibly lead. With the prequel trilogy, we had so many preconceived notions that I didn't want to dilute that walking into the film. I wanted to go into that based on the knowledge I had as a Star Wars fan for the past 16 years since Return of the Jedi. This is when Phantom Menace opened. I wanted to go in there as a pure Star Wars fan because I wanted to see the blanks get filled in that I knew already existed. With the sequel trilogy, we don't know where the blanks are. We don't know what.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's just the possibilities of where this next trilogy can go are absolutely endless at this point. And so I think that's worthy of a little more exploration on a spoiler level than maybe the prequels were.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. But novel or script, can't go there. Can't go there. But hey, you know what? Speaking of books and novelizations, the very first hardback novel, well, I think just the first novel period, to fall under the new modern era of Star Wars canon. That's where everything from henceforth is now considered canon. Comes out as an officially licensed piece of Star Wars, as a Star Wars publication, is this new novel by Jonathan Jackson Miller, Star Wars: A New Dawn, which is a bit of a prequel to Star Wars Rebels, sets up the characters, particularly Kanan, how he became involved in the rebellion, how he met Hera. So that it was just released this past week, and I think it's a great. I've not read it yet. I actually have a copy. The audiobook is available now at one of our sponsors, audible.com, so you can pick that up there. It's probably also available on CD and at other places. But Jim, I gotta say, I've been crying for this for years about cleansing the slate, wiping the slate clean, cleansing the palate of all the baggage of previous expanded universe under, I think, a much much less quality control as what, you know, we're perhaps going to be seeing in the future. So I got to put my time and my money where my mouth is and make sure that I read this novel. Now, you have a special connection to this. This is really cool. You got a gig out of this.
Well, people who've been listening to us for a while, they know that I do some audio trailers with Random House to promote the release of new Star Wars books. We create these, what I like to call hyper creative audio dramas, excerpts from the book, where we take Star Wars voice acting talent. We've been using Clone Wars actors up until this point, but now as we are into the new era of modern canon and Star Wars Rebels, we've tapped Vanessa Marshall to read an excerpt from Star Wars: A New Dawn. And Vanessa did a great job picking, of course, an excerpt from the book featuring Hera, which is her character in Star Wars Rebels. And then Vanessa turns the audio over to me, and I add all kind of cool Star Wars music and sound effects and really bring it to life. Like I like to call them audiobooks on steroids. And maybe one day I'll actually be able to produce an entire book this way. But for now, we've just been producing excerpts. We've done them in the past with James Arnold Taylor, Catherine Tabor, Sam Witwer. And now we're doing it with Vanessa Marshall for Star Wars: A New Dawn. This audio trailer is going to be available on entertainmentweekly.com or starwars.com. I don't know exactly where they're going to release it at this point. It should be out by the time this podcast has gone live. But for now, I just want Jason to hear a little part here, and I want you guys to hear it too. This is an excerpt from A New Dawn, the audio trailer that Vanessa Marshall voiced and I produced for Random House. And this features a little run-in that Hera has with an Imperial stormtrooper.
Who are you? I work here, she said,
approaching as if nothing was wrong.
I may be in the wrong place. It's my first day, she smiled.
Where's your badge?
I forgot. Dark eyes looked down demurely, then back up. Can you believe it? My first day. The stormtrooper studied her for a moment, and then saw the blaster she was wearing. She moved before he did, delivering a high kick that knocked the blaster from the startled stormtrooper's hands. Seeing his weapon clatter away, he lunged for it. She easily sidestepped him and pivoted, leaping onto the armored man's back. Losing purchase on the crystalline floor, he stumbled, her full weight driving his head into the side wall. His helmet cracked loudly against the surface, and he slumped motionless to the ground.
Sorry,
Hera whispered over the fallen trooper's shoulder. Charm doesn't work on everyone.
That's fantastic, dude. That is awesome. Yes, and I didn't mean to give the impression that this was a new thing. You've done several of these, but it's very cool, and to have you jumping into the new pool with the new class there of the cast of Rebels is awesome, and that's great. That's a great primer for picking up the book and. So make sure that you do that.
Yeah, it's a fun book. You know, I'm about 100 pages into it right now. And it does reveal some information about Kanan's past that will be really interesting to watch as he develops into a character in Star Wars Rebels. You get to know who his master was back in the days of the Old Republic. You got to know his real name. Kanan Jarrus is actually an alias for something else. And So it's cool. Little tidbits of the character's information, their background is getting revealed. And what I really like about it is the fact that you're meeting Kanan Jarrus as he is living life as a renegade, moving from place to place. He has not found his purpose. He has not found his place within the rebellion against the Empire. And that gradually comes into the forefront as the book progresses and the character evolves. And I think when it's said and done, it's going to be a perfect lead-in for Star Wars Rebels, which debuts a mere month from today, the day we record this show, September 3rd. So October 3rd is the big release date. So you got a month. You have a reading assignment. Get it done within a month. I think you can do it, and I think it's going to be a great primer for you leading into the debut of Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, that's a much, much better term, rather. I think I said prequel, but lead-in, that's exactly what this is. This leads right into the series and certainly sets up the characters, the situations, and all of that in a way. And for those of you who didn't know, we spoke to Dave Filoni a few weeks ago when we were in San Francisco, and he was able to take a pass through the novel. I mean, down to the actual cover art, he was able to make some notes on. And so they're really, really working hard to make sure that there is symmetry, there's alignment throughout all of the different product lines and communications channels and all of that. So I think it's definitely a step in the right direction, and they're trying their best, I think, to start off right. So that's very cool. And if that wasn't enough, there's been another one of these. I believe this is the final Rebels short that was released and aired on Disney Channel. By the way, I was listening to the show from last week.
Uh-huh.
And I caught myself saying Cartoon Network a couple of times.
Wow. And you know what? It went by me.
It's just so easy to do, for so many years. It's been all about Cartoon Network.
And surprisingly, our listening audience, who knows everything, didn't catch it either. We're you know what? We're like that. We're Star Wars fans in transition right now. And, it's always fun when there's a new personality on a new radio station, and maybe they've left a radio station they've been at for a decade, and you just sit there and you wait for that guy to say the call letters wrong. You know, he'll say his old radio station. It's always, fun. You know, big crack up and everything. Ah, ha, ha, ha. Listen to him. He's...
Well, we did that a few times.
Yeah, I think we have.
In the early days of Rebel Force Radio.
Yes.
It happens. But anyway, so this is the fifth and final short. This one features Ezra And it starts out with him out on the plains of Lothal when he witnesses the a TIE fighter and the Ghost mm-hmm. in a battle, and the TIE fighter is on the losing end and is downed there on the plains of Lothal, and Ezra goes in to investigate and has a funny interaction with the TIE fighter pilot, and we've got a clip here from this particular short.
Hey, don't say thank you or anything.
Thank you, please. I'm an officer of the Imperial Navy. I didn't need your help.
Of course not. Wait, your sleeve's caught on the flight recorder.
It is?
Let me just unhook it for you.
What was that?
So why were you chasing that cargo ship? Were they smugglers?
That's confidential information.
Whoa there, sir. Bit of metal caught on your, posterior. Wouldn't want an officer of the Imperial Navy to split his pants.
No, my pants are...
That just wouldn't be dignified. Hold still, Matt. I almost got it. Oh! There. Now remember, sir, no thank yous. Here, I'll take that. You didn't need my help. And besides, I didn't come to help. I just came to score a little tech for the black market, you woke rat.
Why, you little... You'll be sorry.
Or dead.
You'll be dead.
You'll be dead.
So I love that they're still doing the recycling of some of the, you know, iconic Star Wars dialogue. So Ezra is pretending to help out this downed TIE fighter pilot. Meanwhile, he's stealing from him and ends up with the pilot's helmet and a couple other knickknacks that he gets from the TIE fighter. And at the end there, you see that this TIE fighter pilot's really upset, and he starts using the blasters on the, well, I don't know, blasters? Is that the right terminology? What did you say?
The
laser cannon on the TIE fighter, and Ezra, feeling the force, is able to dodge all of the laser cannon fire, and really does leave the TIE fighter pilot dumbfounded as he realizes that there's something not quite right about this kid. And Jim, you know, I was speculating this could be. I could be all wet here, but is Ezra just a really good con man, con artist, street rat, or is he using a crude form of the Jedi mind trick here?
Yeah, right. He's using the Force much like Anakin Skywalker was in The Phantom Menace. He didn't realize he was using it, but he was a great pod racer because he could see things before they happened. It was a Jedi trait. Anakin didn't realize he was tapping into the Force, but yet he was. It was just his natural instinct, his natural ability. And we're seeing the same thing with Ezra. He doesn't know why he gets these warning signs, why his spider sense starts tingling. He doesn't realize it. It's all just instinctual at this point. And it's going to take a character like Kanan to help him hone those abilities and to learn to use them to his benefit.
Right. I think even his ability to manipulate the TIE fighter pilot into thinking that he's helping. There's fast talk and there's sleight of hand involved, but yep. He also has that basic, as you say, instinct to be able to rely on the Force. So a really interesting character. It was a nice little character study and primer as to what to expect from Ezra. And I found myself really wanting to see more from him. I think there's a tendency for older fans to see, you know, Jim, growing up in the 70s and 80s, it was always the kiss of death on every TV show when they brought the cute kid in, right?
The kid, yeah.
That was
kid.
Always the end. Right. So
It's what you call the Cousin Oliver syndrome.
Yeah, Cousin Oliver, right, from the Brady Bunch. So is Ezra Cousin Oliver of Star Wars?
Absolutely not. So. No way. And this clip definitely displays the likability of the character. And it's a feeling that I got when we first got a preview of this show. And I think that's the thing that rubbed off on you and me both the most, was the fact that we liked Ezra a lot more than we thought we would. It's so easy for people to dismiss this character and say, oh, he's Aladdin or whatever they say about him. I don't think this character is a puss. I don't think this character is a pushover. And I think this character has got a lot of growth ahead of him. I like the foundations that they've laid down for this character. He's defiant. He's oppositional. He's a smart aleck. He's a rebel. He fits the title perfectly. And it's going to be much like with the character of Ahsoka Tano. It's going to be very cool to watch this character grow into his own. And it'll be funny to look back at this place and time before the show is even debuted and laugh about the Aladdin connection that fans are making, because I think fans are going to end up loving this character. I really do. I think he's going to be a very interesting character to watch grow stronger in the Force, and all the pitfalls and traps that come along that path. It's always fun to watch these characters as they go down the path of Jedi knighthood. You know, we've right. seen it with Anakin. We've seen it with Ahsoka. We saw it with Luke, and now we're going to see it again with Ezra.
Now you wait, Jim. Within the next couple of years, Dave Filoni's going to be ducking and dodging those cute kids in the audience saying,
"What happened?
What's going to happen to Ezra?
What's going to happen to Ezra?
Please don't let Ezra die."
And Dave will be like, "Always in motion, the futures." Or he'll be so tired. He'll be like, "Always in future, the motion is." And we're like, no, Dave, come on, snap out of it.
Hey, speaking of Dave, we have a clip. This is the final clip we'll share with you of Dave Filoni and Simon Kinberg. Of course, they were at San Diego Comic-Con last month and talking about Rebels. In fact, Rebels really, as far as the Star Wars presence at Comic-Con, really owned the convention. And so they were chatting with Clever TV and talking about what we can expect from Rebels.
There's so many Star Wars stories being told now, mm-hmm. and just in the incubator that, you know, ideas are finding root in ways they never could before. And I think that's what's really exciting. And, you know, for us, we have a whole story team at Lucasfilm now that we collaborate with to make these stories, and we're constantly improving them right down to the very last minute. I'll be in editorial and see some opportunities, and I'll, you know, send these lines to Simon and say, "Hey, can you make this awesome-er?" And he does, and I get them back the next day, and we plug it in. I mean, and it's a really rapid process that I think for animation is a lot more closer resembling what live action is like, and that's the way George always was with Clone Wars, and we've just kept that tradition up. You know, it's not just an animated show. It's going to be just like any of the movies at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the intention, certainly from a story standpoint, is for it to be and feel cinematic, that the universe feels as rich and as deep as the films did. And I think because of what Dave and his team has been doing visually, it's as rich and interesting. And the weaponry and the vehicles and the world creation is pretty mind-blowing.
We're very cautious about what characters come into the story, because we don't want a small universe syndrome. We don't want everybody to know everybody else. So how characters are included, if they're included, is very, very important and considered by us before we would ever pull someone out of the story that they've always been in. And I think we want our characters to stand on their own.
I think that's really important to feel like this will be the point of entry for a lot of Star Wars viewers. I mean, I have a 5 and a 9-year-old mm-hmm. son, and obviously they've seen a lot of Star Wars because they're my kids. And they're,
I hope so.
And they're also slightly older, but I think for my younger son and his friends, a lot of them, they're really the first point of experience other than like games and toys and pillowcases will be the show. These will be their Han, Luke, Leia. You know, it will be the characters they fall in love with. And they think of, when you say Star Wars, they'll think about Ezra and Sabine and Hera and Chopper and the characters we've created in the show.
That's funny about that is when I was a kid and saw episode 4 at the beginning of the movie, I went looking. I was like, where are the other stories? And there weren't any. Yeah, imagine a kid now if he just happens upon episode 3 or episode 6 or, you know, the ones that experience episode 7. They will go, "Wait, this is episode 7? You mean there's 6 before this? And wait, there's animated shows." And I mean, they have this whole world that opens up. I mean, that's a whole other perspective I hadn't thought of before. It's crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember the day when we had one Star Wars story.
I'll tell you what, here's the thing, though. If you go back in time and you find yourself looking at the original novelization of Star Wars, it says, there's a byline, it says, "From the adventures of Luke Skywalker So you always sought those out. Where are these stories? This is
Jimmy,
one.
Jimmy Mac is still in a bookstore.
I'm still looking for it. I'm still looking. I'm stuck in Barnes & Noble. Help me. But I'll tell you, George.
Isn't that George? I mean, that is so George, you know, because he, you know, let's remember that this was an homage. This was a tribute. This was a love letter to the Saturday matinee serials, the movie serials that George fell in love with Flash Gordon. And so he loved the notion of telling a story where there was really no beginning. It was just you got plopped down in the middle of this amazing world. And the details didn't really matter all that much. And so, yeah.
Well, it's really cool to hear those old memories from Filoni, and also to hear Dave say that he wants the universe to be a much larger, expansive territory where everyone doesn't know each other. It makes me think of that Robot Chicken bit. Luke, I am your father. That's impossible. And Leia is your sister. That's improbable. And I built C-3PO. That's ridiculous. You know, it just it doesn't all have to, you know, the characters all have to have origins within themselves. They can all come from different places and not know everyone in the universe. We don't want that.
We almost saw, and I think you actually see it in the making of episode 3 book, where we almost saw a young Han Solo. Episode 3.
Hey, just from things I've heard behind the scenes, we almost saw young Han Solo in the Clone Wars.
Yes, I've heard that as well. So we still may see young Han Solo.
We might.
In a standalone film. So this story is one that seems persistent at being told someday. So.
Oh, my God. I can't help but think we're going to see Han and Chewie in Star Wars Rebels at some point. They're going to have to cross paths.
Wow.
You know, I mean, they're both working.
What's David Collins doing? Get him in the studio.
Heck yeah.
For sure. So we featured last week the four other Rebels shorts, and one of them, which featured Zeb, was really fun. That was called Entanglement. And Jim, you picked up something in the soundtrack for this short, and it reminded you of not just obviously the John Williams themes, but also you heard some Raiders of the Lost Ark in there.
Well, you know, let me just rewind here. I thought that there was this musical excerpt from the soundtrack of that Zeb clip, that Zeb short, and it had some very distinct music that I thought was very grounded in the works of John Williams, but I thought it was something unique that Kevin Kiner had composed for Star Wars Rebels. And I'm kind of chomping at the bit, believe it or not. I can't believe I'm saying this, because all during the run of the Clone Wars, I wanted to hear traditional Star Wars music infused into the soundtrack. And we just didn't get that in the course of the Clone Wars. The very rare times that it did happen was very exciting, but it just wasn't consistent enough. I wanted that consistent flow of Star Wars music to permeate the soundtrack of Clone Wars. But the creative decision was made to go in a completely opposite direction, give Clone Wars its own musical footprint in the Star Wars galaxy. And now in hindsight, I'm actually kind of cool with that. But, you know, and that's where these discussions is where the term, I believe it was Paul Bateman came up with it, Star Wars oxygen. The infusion of John Williams' music is the oxygen of Star Wars. It's such a great, great way to sum that up. But here we are now getting our taste of Star Wars Rebels. And the only soundtrack I'm hearing coming from Kevin Kiner is music that was already composed by John Williams for Star Wars, maybe slightly modified here and there. And now I find myself looking for unique music from Kiner for Rebels.
See, this is why these poor people that have to make Star Wars, look at what they have to put up with.
They have to put up
with
it.
We are never satisfied.
Hey, I'll tell you what, the hair moves a lot in Star Wars Rebels, and that's pretty cool. But so I thought maybe we might be hearing the introduction of theme music, original theme music for characters in Star Wars Rebels. And I thought maybe in the clip Entanglement we were hearing theme music for Zeb. So here's a little clip from that short, and you'll hear the music tail off at the end of the clip.
You're already late.
Well, you know, that's a very distinct melody and something that can easily be applied to a character. I could see that being a theme for Zeb. However, like I said, we have the smartest listeners in the world, and they did not hesitate to let us know en masse that we were missing a bit of trivia here, that's actually reworked John Williams music once again. But it's not from Star Wars. It's actually from Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's a track called The Basket Game. Of course, you remember the scene from Raiders where Karen Allen.
Marion Ravenwood.
Oh, my God. I forget the music. I forget the characters. I love Raiders. And let me just make that clear here on the Star Wars podcast. Raiders is not Star Wars. It's not. So I can't be beholden to a level of knowledge for Raiders of the Lost Ark that I display for The Wars. I just can't be. They're kissing cousins. There we go. Thank you. Basket Game, Marion Ravenwood and the monkey, they're hiding in the baskets. And Indy's, you know, looking around in the marketplace, desperately trying to find that basket Marion's hiding in. And wouldn't you know, the music from Raiders is making a connection to Star Wars Rebels.
Wow. Can we hear the clip from Rebels again here?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I want to hear that again.
It's more than inspiration. It's a direct lift. So like I said, God bless Raiders of the Lost Ark, one of my all-time favorite films. But do I have matters of trivia and soundtrack and all that stuff dedicated to my memory the way I do with The Wars? No, I don't. So thank you, everyone who out there you guys do. And so it's so great to hear. So what's next? Are we going to be getting music from Jaws or Close Encounters or Jurassic Park or God forbid Harry Potter in Star Wars Rebels? No, let's just draw the line at Raiders. Like I said, they're kissing cousins, so they're practically in the family, but let's not branch off into all of Williams stuff. You know, I don't want listeners sending me emails.
Schindler's List.
Yes, right. Did you hear the Schindler's List music in Rebels? You were making out during Schindler's List? You were making out during Star Wars Rebels?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, that was, eagle-eared Rebel Force radio listeners. Amazing. We have just the best audience in all Star Wars podcasting. But you know what? They don't always agree with everything we say. They have their own perspectives, their own opinions. And Jim, when we were going through these four shorts last week, there was something that really stuck out at you that you weren't a big fan of. This was the short Ghost, or excuse me, Machine and the Ghost, I believe it was.
Right.
And there was a moment when Kanan is on the gun turret on the Ghost, and there was a sound effect that you couldn't get behind. You didn't like it. You thought it sounded cheap, that it just wasn't
fitting of the situation and what they were trying to portray. But then we got some feedback on Facebook.
We did. And I mean, it's this kind of feedback is why I do Rebel Force Radio each and every week, is because we get this kind of feedback, Jason. And it came from Adam Hasselwood, who listened to some of my critiques of the sound design for Star Wars Rebels, specifically that gun turret sequence. When Kanan was sitting in that gun turret and he would rotate in it, it made a tick, 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 tick kind of sound that I thought, like, it lacked creativity. I felt it sounded cheap. Jason, you challenged me to actually, let's hear that actual sound effect right now.
Yeah, this is the one here. There it is.
Yeah, right. Right at the end. Like a... God, what does that sound like? That's pretty cool. That's a talent.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, move over, D. Baker.
You're very skilled. You and him can have a show.
And your cricket.
He'll do the cricket.
Here comes me.
He'll do the cricket for that sound effect. I just felt like, oh, that lacked creativity. And you challenged me. You said, well, what did it sound like in Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope? And so I went back and I researched that sequence. And there really was no sound design applied to Luke and Han in those gun turrets moving back and forth. It was you got the sound of the cannons, you got the sound of the TIE fighters, you got the incredible John Williams soundtrack, but you really didn't have any mechanical sound applied to those chairs as they swivel around. So this got listener Adam Hasselwood thinking, and he sent us a message on Facebook who says, on this episode, you guys were discussing the clicking noise that Kanan's turret chair makes when it spins around. I watched the clip again to hear it for myself and was able to identify the inspiration for that particular sound. It may not be the sound the turret chair makes in the Falcon in the movies, which I have since discovered is there is no sound. But, Adam Hasselwood says, it's definitely the sound that the vintage Millennium Falcon Kenner toy makes. So I was like, what is, you know what? You got to be kidding me. So Jason, play that sound from Rebels again.
Sure.
So now I went and I watched the old vintage Millennium Falcon Kenner commercial from the 70s on YouTube, and I pulled this sound.
Radar! I'll fire the laser cannon.
Oh, you can hear it there a little bit. Play that again.
Yeah,
again.
Got him on radar! I'll fire the laser cannon.
Okay, well, you know what? You can't really hear it that good in the commercial. So I actually went to my collection and mic'd up the vintage Kenner Millennium Falcon, and I recorded what that turret sounded like as you rotate it.
Wow. I want to go back to the commercial because it's
got him on radar. I'll fire the laser cannon.
Yeah,
and then this is your vintage Falcon.
Yes. Sound familiar?
Yeah, let's listen to Rebels again. Yeah.
So we'll get to
inspiration,
the
inspiration. Huh?
You know what? We'll get to the bottom of this once and for all. We'll reach out to those in the know and find out if that actually was the inspiration. Because if it was, then this is art. I take back all critiques. If this is the level of attention that they're going to be paying to the Star Wars legacy, both in the real world and the silver screen, I take it. I like it. And it is good. So, I mean, like I said, this is why we do the show. So we can just blurt out anything that's on our mind about Star Wars. And as you said, Jason, the most learned, the most intelligent, the most well-schooled audience of Star Wars fans will be quick to let us know we're wrong.
Oh, always. Always. Before we get any further, we should talk about this Little Debbie thing.
Yeah, we should, because knowing that you guys are such a great audience, we always want to give back to you. And Little Debbie is so behind Star Wars, and they are so locked into fandom and what makes fandom important that they want to support it. So they support shows like Rebel Force Radio. They help us spread the good word of Star Wars each and every week. So in return, each and every week, we help spread the good word of Little Debbie. And we ask you to join us in this crusade. And we tell you to take to the social media, go out and tweet, post up things on Facebook about Rebel Force Radio and about Little Debbie, and spread the word. And this week we're looking at Twitter, and we're looking at Jeremy Hunt, who tweets, "Took Rebel Force Radio with me on my evening hike, then rewarded myself with a cosmic cupcake from Little Debbie. Yum." So, and then he posts a picture of the Little Debbie Cosmic Cupcakes box. I have one here right in front of me, actually. And so, Jeremy, thank you so much for spreading the word about Little Debbie. We are sending you a galactic snack pack, courtesy of RFR and LD, Little Debbie. And that'll be showing up on your doorstep very soon, as soon as you get in touch with us at show@rebelforceradio.com with your shipping address. And you'll be knee deep in Little Debbie for a while, because those galactic snack packs are amazing. And yes, they do include cosmic cupcakes, the official snack of Rebel Force Radio. So thank you so much, Jeremy Hunt, for spreading the word about Little Debbie. And thank you so much, Little Debbie, for helping support Star Wars fans.
Rebel Force Radio.
You've already made that Star Wars reference.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars parody!
All right, but I don't know of any meme or viral campaign that is caught on quite like the Ice Bucket Challenge. And I say that, Jim, as one who has participated in the Ice Bucket Challenge, both from a ice bucket and from a donation perspective. And for it to get not only to my attention, but get to my attention to the point where I'm actually participating, it's got to be a pretty big deal. And but with a Star Wars movie in production, how could the cast and the crew keep away, stay safe, stay dry, stay warm from the Ice Bucket Challenge? The answer is they couldn't. They couldn't do it. And actually, there have been a number of Star Wars celebs, and really some of the funny stuff in particular that the 501st has done in response to the Ice Bucket Challenge has really been great. My favorite is the Tusken Raider pouring the ice over R2-D2,
yeah.
Out of the dome of some poor astromech that has been disintegrated or torn apart in Jabba's palace, what have you. Very cool stuff. So we have some clips from some of the stars of Episode 7 and their ice bucket challenges. We'll start off with Daisy Ridley. Now, this is one I actually haven't seen. So I've pictured in my head many times, but I
stop it. She is in the bathtub too when she does it. But I'll tell you, and she's standing there. So she is the first Star Wars castmate to create the Ice Bucket Challenge video. So that's what makes her appearance particularly noteworthy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daisy Ridley. I have been ice nominated by Chia James. I nominate Mark Hamill, Simon Pegg, and Louisa Connolly Burnham. May the icy force be with you.
That sounds like me when ice hit me. My voice might have gone a little higher, actually.
Daisy's pretty cute. That's actually the first acting I've ever seen her do. I've never seen her on screen before. That was a first for me. I've never seen Daisy do anything. That was the first time I've heard her voice. That's the first time I've heard her voice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to say, acting, I really believe she was pouring ice over herself.
Oh, yeah, yeah, she was. You
know, I bought it.
Yes.
So she challenged Mark Hamill, and this thing spreads like a virus, as you know. She challenged Mark, and Mark Hamill, a very scraggly-looking Mark Hamill, responded. You know what he reminds me of when he played the dude on Amazing Stories? Remember the Steven Spielberg show, Amazing Stories?
Yeah.
And Mark Hamill had an appearance on that, and
wow,
he played like a, I swear he played like a hermit or something.
Wow,
yeah, I have to look into that.
Yeah, look into that.
But anyway, here's Mark Hamill with the Ice Bucket Challenge.
I'm here to accept Daisy Ridley's challenge, and I'm happy to do so with reservations, because before we get too far, I'd like to nominate Ray and Dave Davies for this challenge. Kinks fans around the world. And while I'm at it, all the new cast members of Episode 7, it's time to start pulling your weight. But in light of the California drought, I think it's only responsible to do something that's in the spirit of the challenge without wasting water. And therefore, I filled this eye drop with really, really, really ice-cold water. And I think, symbolically, I'm fulfilling the challenge. So here goes.
Not wet enough.
Happy now.
Oh. Okay. Well, at least we watered the grass.
Yeah, I think Mark got like three buckets right to the face.
Oh, God. And he was like a wet cat there for a second. Yeah. He just kind of curled up in his chair.
He did.
Not...
He did.
He holds that eyedropper in front, you know, on top of his head.
He probably and, smelled like wet dog. With
oh my god! With the beard, but so like he holds the eyedropper over his head, and I'm just thinking to myself, "Oh, come on, Mark, really?"
Right.
And then
right.
He, not wet enough. I don't know. That might have been his son Nathan who was actually shooting that video. And then, boy, they nailed him. They nailed. And yeah, so Mark's wearing a Kinks shirt. And as you heard in his challenge, he challenged Ray and Dave Davies from the Kinks to the Ice Bucket Challenge. And I've not heard from Ray Davies yet, but Dave Davies from the legendary rock band the Kinks stepped forward and responded to Mark's challenge. Now, I got to say this about Dave's video was he's wearing a Star Wars shirt. You know, Mark wore a Kinks shirt in his Ice Bucket Challenge, so it's only natural that Dave pays him back with a Star Wars shirt. And he responds to Mark's challenge, but doesn't really pull the trigger on it too much. He dumps the bucket over his head, and the bucket is filled with vintage Kenner Star Wars action figures. And so they all tumble onto him, and he holds them up. They're all very well used, too. And he holds them up to the camera. And then he takes a bucket of ice and dumps them on the action figures. So,
all right, here it is.
Hi, Mark. This is Dave Davies of the Kinks. And I accept your ice bucket challenge to raise awareness about ALS. I bet I need a bit of Dutch courage for this. Cheers, Mark. Oh, God.
Gonna be cold.
Oh, what's this? Hey! Luke Skywalker! Hiya, Luke! Princess Leia, look! Oh. I nominate Graham Nash to take the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. Stormtrooper.
Duh, Vader.
R2. They're going to take the Ice Bucket Challenge as well.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, everyone.
Stamp out ALS.
But does he have an action figure of Graham Nash?
He does not. If one exists, I'm sure he'd own it. But yeah, those figures were just like so worn down too. I can't help but think to myself that Dave has had those figures for 35 years. You know, they're his personal collection, and he's just been keeping them in a bucket waiting to for the day. He could dump them on his head and it would be sociably acceptable. But yeah, a great response. A great response from a great rock and roll legend, a rock and roll Hall of Famer. Yeah, Dave Davies from the Kinks. Still waiting for Ray.
Yeah. No sign of him, huh?
Not yet.
Well, I'd say that the most unlikely Ice Bucket Challenge participant has to be the grizzled one himself.
So what? I'm supposed to stand here and dump a bucket of ice. Can we use short round? No. Too short. Can't use Callista. She can't pick up the bucket. She weighs 35 pounds. I nominate Shia LaBeouf. Anne Heche.
Anne Heche. I forgot about that one.
6 days, seven nights.
Right. Yeah. I know, Harrison. I saw it. I saw it.
And I nominate the guy who played Belloc.
Whatever his name is. He was somebody.
Where is he? Where's Belloc?
All right, Harrison Ford's Ice Bucket Challenge. And looking quite dapper, I must say.
I think, Jason, you saw this video and you like picked up the phone and called me and had a report to me on what Harrison was wearing in his Ice Bucket Challenge.
I thought he looked homeless. And the T-shirt is too short, and he reaches up, and he's holding the bucket over his head. You can kind of see his belly hanging out from his.
See your belly.
A classic.
Remember that one? There's an oldie, but a goodie.
That's a classic. All right, Harrison Ford Ice Bucket Challenge.
This is Harrison Ford. I'm accepting the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. It was challenged by Dr. Paul Cox, a leader in research on ALS. From the Institute for Ethnomedicine here in Jackson, Wyoming, I nominate Dr. Larry Froesch, Dr. Bruce Gwirtz, Dr. Randy Sherman. Doctors, you have 24 hours.
The thing that bugs me about
the end.
The thing that bugs me about the ice
frozen in carbonite there.
True. The thing that bugs me about the Ice Bucket Challenge is the fact that they stop recording too soon. I like to watch them shiver a little longer.
You know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. That actually happened on the video that we did, that I did for work. I wanted to see, because I had my back. We did a whole group, like six of us, and I couldn't wait to see the video because I wanted to see how everyone reacted. You're right. They cut it off really fast, and there have been several others. I agree. You want to hear the aftermath.
Yeah, you want – that's the money right there is you want to see them shivering cold. But other Star Wars notables who've done it, Gareth Edwards stood in the fountain at Lucasfilm, in the Yoda fountain, and he had the bucket dumped on his head. And he challenged his fellow Star Wars directors – I think Rian Johnson was one of the names mentioned, and we still have not received confirmation from Lucasfilm that Rian Johnson actually is directing Episode 8 and writing Episode 8 and Episode 9, but he is. And
and maybe that's why he hasn't responded to the challenge, since he's not official. By the way, where's the Rebels guys in all this? Where's Filoni? Why isn't he pouring any ice over his head?
Well, maybe one of us should do the Ice Bucket Challenge and challenge Filoni.
Maybe one of us that hasn't done it yet.
Well, no, see, I've done the Ice Bucket Challenge a bunch of times. I just haven't videoed it yet.
Oh, bull.
Oh, I have. Bull. Oh,
I don't
buy
it for 1 second.
Oh, no. I go out there just about every day and dump some ice on my head, and nobody is shooting it. Where are the crews? Where's the camera crews? When I'm ready to do
that for years.
So I'm still waiting for Shia LaBeouf. You know, Steven did it. But Steven did it.
Spielberg did do it.
Steven did it.
Challenge
George. But George is like, no, not the hair.
Right? Well, yeah, that's right.
Every once in a while, I correct myself up on this show.
Right. Not the hair. Oh, to have hair like that at that age, it's incredible.
Oh, so
that is that. Talk about the that's the force.
That's incredible. I think when
people say, "What, George? What is the force?"
The hair. I think all the advancements he made in film technology over the decades was all just to advance the technology of his own hair. George's hair is actually CGI.
We've all been implanted. That's how we're able to see this. But you know what's interesting? It's like the older the dude gets, the more hair he has.
It is so impressive.
How is that possible?
It is so impressive. It must have something to do with the plaid. Plaid must help hair follicles and their health.
It must. Yeah. Well, in, you know, several billion dollars also helps. But no, those are jeans. And I don't mean the Jordache that he wears. I'm talking about jeans with a G. Those are jeans, good jeans.
He got the good jeans. So, definitely we recommend that everyone listening donate even a buck or two to the ALS Association. You just go to ALSA.org/donate, and it's real simple. And they actually have Steven Spielberg's video up on their donation page. So you can watch Steven challenge George, and nothing but silence from GL. But I'm telling you, it's the hair.
It's got to be. Because I don't think I've ever seen George wet.
You don't see a wet George, no.
No.
No, wow. He's pretty dry. He's pretty dry.
All right. Jamie King, who's part of the extended family here at Rebel Force Radio, appeared on Conan O'Brien a few weeks ago. And, of course, that's a big deal because, she's married to our good friend Kyle Newman. And, of course, everywhere Jamie goes, it seems as though Star Wars gets brought up. Now, Conan O'Brien, a big fan of the wars, he Pimpbot 2000, clearly, based on C-3PO.
Well, and don't forget that George actually established some canon when he appeared on Conan O'Brien's show. And he
Did you
named,
say canon or Conan?
A little bit of both, because he sat on Conan's show and officially gave Admiral Mahdi his official first name. Conan Antonio Mahdi is the name, the official name of that character from Star Wars A New Hope. And that was made canon on Conan O'Brien's show by George Lucas himself. So Conan actually has a character in the original Star Wars named after him.
Right. So, yes, he's a big fan. I believe it was also when we were at Rancho Obi-Wan, there is the R2-T2. Which is the R2-D2 as Mr. T. I think that was from the Conan O'Brien show, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, big fan. Anyway, Jamie King's on there, and here's how she talks about her hubby, our good pal Kyle Newman.
You're married, and you have a child, and I'm just curious. A lot of guys like me would think, okay, how did this guy land you? When you met this man, what is it that he said? What is it that he did? Do you know what I mean? Did he have was it a cool line? Was it the way he looked?
I actually met him on a movie set,
mm-hmm.
And it was Harvey Weinstein had asked me to do a movie at a Golden Globe show party, and basically mm-hmm. I thought that it was just like party talk, and I agreed.
Right.
And Monday morning the script arrived, and I realized I agreed to a movie that I had never read before.
Right.
And so I flew down to do this movie, and I walked into the set, and I saw a sweatshirt, and on the back of it it said, "New York, I am your father." I was like, that's such a rad sweatshirt. I have to have that sweatshirt. And he turned around, and there was this hot, gorgeous man, and it was like a Darth Vader chest plate, and that was the director. And I was like, wait, who said this is the director? Because he was so young and so gorgeous, and I was like, And I don't believe in on-set romances. I've never done that before, and I didn't. I was a good girl, but he just, like, took my breath away, and it was the sweatshirt.
Okay, it was a sweatshirt.
It was a sweatshirt.
I like how you threw in there that he's super hot and handsome. I mean, if I had turned around wearing that same sweatshirt, you know, it's me. Look, nothing's gonna happen. So don't act like it was the sweatshirt.
It was the sweatshirt.
It was the sweatshirt because you're that.
Because I was looked at the back and then the front, and then took me like 2 minutes before I looked at his face.
I'd never heard that story.
Yeah.
That's cute. I knew they met obviously on the set of Fanboys, but I didn't know that it was the sweatshirt. And you know what? Conan's right. Had he been in the sweatshirt, nada.
Well, he's pretty funny too, the way he was doing yeah. it. But I'll tell you what, you know, just like, you know, a little bit of background here. Jamie says that she doesn't believe in on-set romances and she was a good girl. And she was. It wasn't until after Fanboys wrapped when Jamie and Kyle made the connection. They were at an event later in the future and started talking at that, and one thing led to another. And hello, James Newman.
Okay, so she goes on to talk about her hubby, this hot, handsome man wearing his New York I Am Your Father sweatshirt, and how they're all a bunch of Star Wars fans now.
He's obviously a Star Wars fan.
Yes, it was a film called Fanboys, which was about Star Wars fans, and I'm a huge Star Wars fan as well. So it was a match made in heaven.
Now when you had your is it a son?
Yes,
your son. When you had your son, the baby shower is Star Wars themed.
Yes.
And this is the cake that you guys had for. Which is pretty intense. Like, that's taking it to a new level.
We're next level. We're really next level. It's,
And it is, your boy's name is?
James Knight.
James Knight. Is that in any way a reference to Jedi Knight?
Yes.
Yes! The defense rests.
Of course, it's Knight with a K-N. Yeah, like Wayne Knight.
It's well played is what it is.
Yeah, very well done. Very well done. So, if you haven't seen the cake, you got to Google that. It is incredible, the cake from the baby shower. It is taken to a whole new level. Crazy.
What's it look like?
You haven't seen this thing?
Well, I saw it on Conan briefly, but.
The cake, it's got like Jamie and Kyle are in the thing, and it's like they're riding a spaceship. I mean, let me pull it up here. Kyle Newman, Jamie King, Star Wars cake. this thing's unbelievable. Oh, excuse me. So it's Kyle and Jamie reenacting the famous scene as Luke swings across the chasm with Princess Leia. Jamie's got her Princess Leia buns up there, and little James Knight is attached to the bottom of the cable. And the cake itself is like a looks like some kind of a comet, maybe a comet with a planet, or a planet with kind of rings around it instead of there being What is that in Saturn? The rings, right? Well, this has got like little clothespins and little binkies. I don't know. Do you call them nookies at your house or binkies?
We call it the pacifier.
The pacifier, yeah. we call it binkies.
We called it a pipe. I know it's kind of unorthodox, but that's what we call it.
Of course. Of course. I expect nothing less. We call them binkies, but some people call them nookies or. I had a nookie means something else in my house, but some people call them nookies. Anyway, it's very cool cake. Very cool cake. Gotta check it out.
I gotta tell you, I found a picture of it online myself, and after seeing many disturbing images after punching in Kyle Newman cake, I actually found the real thing. And it is, I don't know where the cake ends and the artwork begins, but this is one of the coolest cakes I've ever seen. We'll definitely post up a picture of this on our Facebook page.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, all right. Last clip here, Jamie King on Conan talking about their wedding. Was there a Star Wars wedding?
And Star Wars was a theme at your wedding as well?
Not so. I wanted to keep it classy. I didn't want it to be like, you know, walking down to like any, you know, John Williams composition or anything like that. But we have like Yoda napkins, little things like that.
Yoda napkins.
Yeah, it's just little.
But it's not like the man, accents. The person performing the ceremony didn't have like a Darth Vader helmet.
No, and we didn't say.
You know, wasn't that kind of.
No, may the force be with you. Yeah, yeah. Always, or with
take
us
him,
always.
Do you?
Why didn't I think of that though?
As husband, take him, do you? Honor him, you will.
Oh, well, good stuff. Good times. Jamie King classing up the joint there on Conan and saying it loud, saying it proud, representing the Star Wars fans and our good buddy Kyle Newman. So very cool to see Jamie on Conan, and she will be back on TV this fall on the CW in Heart of Dixie. So check your local.
You gotta love that. A girl who says she wants to keep her wedding classy and then mentions that they had Yoda napkins at the event. So that's fantastic.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, while you're thinking about that, I want to tell you a little bit about Dorkside Toys. They've been a sponsor with us for some time. We appreciate them so much. DorksideToys.com. You got to check these guys out. And they really are the best source for Star Wars action figures. It just the service that you get is incredible. The way the figures come packaged with such TLC and care. A lot of times, Jim, I'm getting them unpunched. You know, yeah. The top of the card, they're not even punched. It's just amazing, amazing stuff. And that was when I was ordering the vintage series. Of course, now that I'm into the black series, it's a little bit different story. But still, the quality and the attention to detail is there. So you got to check them out. They have both the 3 3/4 inch and the 6 inch scale right now up for pre-order. I just pre-ordered the latest wave of the 3 3/4 picked up a couple of previous waves that I had missed, and those arrived this past week and in just phenomenal condition. It was such a treat getting those boxes. I got them, Jim, in like 2 days.
Oh,
which is amazing because I didn't do any rush shipping or anything. I just standard shipping. Mm-hmm. Boom, 2 days later, there they are.
Oh, incredible. Their attention to your order is immediate, and it's just such a great service because you're not running out going on these toy runs that end up to be just completely futile efforts. You order ahead of time. Their pre-order service is amazing. You can order these figures months in advance and forget about it. And then the next thing you know, these figures are showing up at your door. You're not taking these ridiculous runs out to Walmart, having to deal with the dregs of the earth that populate the aisles of that shopping center. No. Hey, I shop at Walmart, so count me as one of the dregs.
But you know what, though? We all say that, right? We all shop at Walmart, yeah. And then we all talk about the people that shop
well,
at Walmart.
Oh, God, it's just an insufferable
it's just
experience.
Not me, you know. It's not me. I'm okay. Right. Everybody else at Walmart.
Oh, well, for crying out loud, it can be an insufferable experience going to Walmart.
Doesn't matter. It's not just Walmart. It's Target. It's Toys R Us. You go there, and you turn that corner, and you go down the Star Wars aisle, and there's like five pegs. Four are empty,
yeah.
And one still has, you know, a Naboo pilot from the vintage collection,
yeah.
Swinging there, and it's very dispiriting. It's very disheartening. But
awful.
What happens? You're driving home from work. You make that turn into the driveway, and you look on your porch, and there's a box.
There it is.
And you're like, what's this? Oh my God, Dorkside Toys!
You saved yourself the time. You spared yourself the disappointment.
Yep.
Of, like, boy, Jason, you bring that up. When you turn that corner at Walmart and you have that moment of optimism completely dashed when you see empty pegs on the wall. And with Dorkside, you get it all in the box. You have satisfaction and fulfillment in that box.
That's right. No empty pegs, just full boxes.
Right on.
DorksideToys.com. Let them know that Rebel Force Radio sent you. And we appreciate them and their support of us here at Rebel Force Radio.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
All right, this is the part of the show where we go through the latest and greatest Star Wars Episode 7 spoilers. We've got 15 minutes to do it, and each spoiler will be rated as strong with the Force or poodoo.
That's right, Jason. We're running a little late this week, but we want to get in some spoiler talk, so I'm taking the old analog timer, and I'm setting it to 15 minutes. So if you do not want to hear spoilers about Star Wars Episode 7, if you do not want to learn any information about the future of Star Wars, fast forward 15 minutes from now, setting the timer right now.
All right, Jim, the first one out of the gate, the Sith homeworld, will we see it in Episode 7? Rumors are that we will. What do you know about this?
Well, you know, Jason, I've been hearing rumblings that they're going to be using a planet. I don't know who they are, whether it's the Imperial or a faction of the Empire or whatever the Galactic Republic is. They're going to find this planet that can be used itself as a sort of super weapon. And that planet's going to be revealed as the Sith homeworld. Now, whether or not it'll be called Korriban or Moriband or any other iterations of the Sith homeworld, that is the word that we're hearing about this planet, that it's more than just a planet. It's actually going to be a super weapon.
You raise an interesting point. You know, Korriban versus Moriban. We know that for many years, Korriban was the Sith homeworld, but that was changed to Moriban in the Clone Wars because, well, George just didn't think that he didn't want to have two planets both starting with Kor in them.
He thought
Coruscant.
Sounded, yeah.
Korriban.
Right.
So from a canon perspective, we know that the Sith homeworld is Moriban. So will this planet be turned into a weapon? Will it be the Sith homeworld? I am going to say on this rumor. I don't think we're going to see the Sith homeworld. It feels a little too, I was going to say EU, but we'll say Legends. Uh-huh. This feels just a little too Legends for me for Episode 7.
It sounds like some fanboy lip service going on for those who are big fans of the Old Republic MMO video game.
Yes, yes.
Now, apparently, the word is this planet will be a major factor between Cold War negotiations going on between the Galactic Republic and the Empire, or empires, as we've been hearing, where there might actually be factions of the original Galactic Empire that we know from the original trilogy, that over the course of time, that empire has sort of degraded and may have split off into separate empires. So we're dealing with two empires butting heads, and then you're dealing with a Galactic Republic, which has risen up out of the ashes of what was the rebellion, melded along with the remnants of the Empire. Boy, does it get complicated when you try
it
to.
Does. It does. I don't think there. It's going to be that complicated. Star Wars.
I don't think so either.
The cinematic. Yes. Yeah. The cinematic Star Wars has always been about the black hats and the white hats. And I think that certainly in the original trilogy, I think that's sort of the spirit that JJ is going to be taking in. I just don't see an overly complicated political plot in Star Wars Episode 7's future.
No, neither do I. So I call Boodoo on that one. Once again, I think that rumor in particular is playing off of what has been a very popular and a very ravenously supported faction of fans who like the Old Republic game.
Totally agree. For you. All right, Han and Leia, what's going on with them? We've heard that Han and Chewie might be racing around the galaxy in a Star Destroyer, not the Millennium Falcon in there, but there's been very little talk about Han and Leia. However, the latest rumors are that Han and Leia did have a child in between episode 6 and 7, and that Adam Driver is going to be playing their son, though Han, the father, And the child and Leia could all be estranged from each other. So whether they were married or not, that doesn't, we don't, just because they have a kid doesn't mean that they have to have been married. Look at Indiana Jones and Marion Ravenwood, for example. They had Shia LaBeouf, and then and Indy didn't even know, but maybe he didn't want to know. But a driver is on the cover of GQ, and Jim, I don't know if you've seen the cover of GQ with Adam Driver on there, but he's got a very Han Solo looking outfit going on. He's kind of got like an off-white cream colored shirt. Now it's sort of a modern, hipper version, but he's got like an off-white cream colored shirt with a black vest. And they're definitely playing that up, and the slug on the cover of the magazine is linking him to Star Wars and all that. What about Leia? Leia, according to rumors, has pursued the political career. She's kind of followed the straight and narrow. She has not learned the ways of the Force. She's estranged from not just perhaps her son and her longtime boyfriend, whatever, husband, I don't know, Han Solo, but perhaps her brother Luke as well. We got more about that coming up in a second. Am I missing something? Is that what we're dealing with as far as spoilers and rumors on?
Well, of course, there's been the rumor that Adam Driver will be playing the son of Han and Leia. There's also the rumor that Adam Driver is playing the main villain of Episode 7. There's also the rumor that Daisy Ridley is playing the daughter of Han and Leia. For starters, let's go back to that GQ cover shot. I'm looking at it right now, and I don't think he is dressed up like Han Solo in this. I think maybe there might have been some sort of subtle nod to the wardrobe of Han Solo, but that just doesn't, to me...
Oh, no, that's totally... No, they're totally trying to evoke Han Solo.
Do you really think so?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. From a color perspective, yeah, it's, I mean, like you said, it's a more modern, hipper version, but no, I think that's what they're going for. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know what? I'm going to send you this. This is great radio, but there's a mashup. If you go to, do this. Go to Google Images,
okay,
and just do a Google search for Adam Driver Han Solo GQ. And you'll see they've got a side-by-side comparison of the cover, and then a shot of Harrison in Episode 4, A New Hope. You'll see that there.
All right, taking a look here. Adam Driver and Harrison Ford.
All right, I'm sending you the link.
Send me the link. I don't
just
know.
Sent you the link. Sent you the link there. We can post this on our Facebook, and you can be the judge. I just sent you the link via Skype. Click on that and tell me what you think.
Okay. Clicking now. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Tell me that's not a deliberate homage.
All right. I guess so. I mean, I guess so.
Shirt's kind of unbuttoned. You're showing some chest there.
Now that we're seeing this comparison side by side, and I didn't need the side by side. I mean, I didn't need. But what I'm really looking at,
I'm trying to spoon feed you, Jim.
I know, and it's just you're driving me nuts. But seeing the two side by side like this, I'm trying to look for similarities. Obviously, their eye color is very different. Their overall facial structure, no. I mean, Adam has much more pointed features and much thinner facial structure, and that nose is really something to behold. So, I don't really know if I could see him playing the son of Harrison Ford. I mean, anything's possible in filmmaking and stuff, and we're nitpicking like crazy right now. But I think Adam Driver is definitely. I don't think he's going to be playing Han Solo's son in Star Wars Episode 7.
Really?
I'm not feeling it.
Jimmy Mac says,
"Hold you."
Whereas I say,
"The Force is strong with this one."
Yes, I believe that he will be the son of Han and Leia. I think that we're going to find that our big happy family at the end of Episode 6, dancing around in the Ewok village, they're all estranged from each other. I think that's what we're going to find, that not just the Empire has splintered across the galaxy. I think that the Rebels have also. I think that they've all sort of just kind of gone their own way, and there's going to be some massive disruption that's going to bring them all together and remind them why they were, why the galaxy and the destiny brought them together in the first place. So
let me ask you this.
That's part of it. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. If you think that Adam Driver is going to be playing the son of Han Solo, who's the mother?
Oh, Leia.
Leia's definitely the mother.
Oh, yeah.
But you feel that at this point in time, Han and Leia are not necessarily together.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay.
That's what I think. I think they're all, I think something happened that fractured them all.
Okay.
Splintered them all. That's what I'm thinking.
That's what I'm thinking, too. That's definitely what I'm thinking. But not before they had a son.
No. They had that. I'm thinking he was conceived right there in that bush, right there on the Endor.
That's when it happened.
Yeah, they shoved Wicket down, and they.
Jeez, Endor went from military theater to Woodstock Music Festival, just like that.
He's my brother.
Far out, man. Far out.
Yeah.
A lot of freaks,
it's
man.
Not like that at all. Let me show you. So there we go. Now, here's a rumor that I thought was kind of interesting. You know, not long ago we covered that the Episode 7 production crew had descended upon the small Irish island of Skellig Michael. And this does and then it was later reported that Mark Hamill himself was spotted there. And he did tweet that he had a good. He said, "Ireland, you are wonderful. Love the country. Love the people. It was only like a 3-day shoot." The rumor is, the spoiler is that what they were shooting there on that little island is Luke Skywalker is a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
Hence his very disheveled look that he has going on. This is where everybody's like, "Oh, he's got the Obi-Wan beard." Yeah, if Obi-Wan had like rats living in it. Mm-hmm. No, this is, he's got the beard of a, and the hair of a man who hasn't been seen, has been living in a cave on an island somewhere, as a prisoner for the last 20 years. That's the look that he's got going on.
Yeah, Mark did tweet out a lot of pictures that he took with his family to visit various Beatle landmarks in Hamburg, Germany. And obviously that's where the Beatles kicked off their career. You know, they're from Liverpool, and they spent a lot of time playing underground clubs in Hamburg, and that's where they struck it big and got discovered. So Mark, being a big Beatles fan he is, he went out there to visit all those places and posted up a lot of pictures. And, yeah, he did look, I mean, more disheveled than anything else. And so it's kind of interesting how Obi-Wan Kenobi's isolation was chosen. It appears that maybe Luke Skywalker's isolation might not be anything that he wanted to have happen. And so we've been hearing that Mark had disappeared after Return of the Jedi. And so we're talking a period of 30 years. I don't think that's very strong for the character. Since then, we've heard that perhaps that time frame could be more like a decade. And I think that's much more appropriate. I think that Luke should have probably gone on to further adventures and not just disappeared right after Return of the Jedi, unless it was a self-imposed hermitude, much like Obi-Wan Kenobi did. Hermitude, is that a word?
Exile.
But I we've heard recent reports that the time frame might be more like a decade. Luke has been gone for a decade, and the rumor is that the Inquisitors are the ones who have actually captured him, and it will be the search for Skywalker will be the main theme of Star Wars Episode 7.
Star Wars 7, the search for Skywalker. I like that. There's some cross-pollination going on there. I think this whole thing about Luke being a prisoner and being
away from his compatriots for a long time is absolutely valid.
The Force is strong with this one.
Indeed.
Yeah, I like it too. I like it too.
Yeah. This is one we had on the docket for last week. We didn't get to it. Jim, I need your help on this. What's going on between Benedict Cumberbatch and Gwendolyn Christie?
Well, this is very interesting stuff, and this is totally behind the scenes. But from what I understand, Benedict Cumberbatch was actually cast to play this villain in Star Wars Episode 7. And as a result of fan backlash and media backlash about the fact that very few female characters were announced in the initial cast announcement for Episode 7, that Benedict was recast. His character was recast.
Oh! Well, that's it.
No, so I'm going to finish. I have to finish this one. Okay, we have right, to finish this.
Okay, all right.
Okay, all right. So he was recast, and his character was changed into a female character, a female antagonist, and Gwendolyn Christie will be taking that role. And this is a role that has been rumored to be a chrome-armored stormtrooper or a trooper of some sort decked out in chrome. That role was originally supposed to go to Cumberbatch, but because of fan backlash, because of the fact that there was a lack of diversity amongst the original cast announcement, that role was actually recast. And I was someone who said when the Lupita Nyong'o Gwendolyn Christie announcement was made, a lot of people were saying, well, thank God that females are being cast in the new Star Wars film. This is a direct result of the protests and the loud vocal backlash. And I thought, no, that's ridiculous. They're just rolling out these cast announcements here and there. It's just trickling out. But from things I've been hearing, though, there's actual basis in the truth in this, that Cumberbatch was actually cast in Episode 7, and then his role has been recast so it could feature a female antagonist.
Fojo!
Thanks, Saboba.
I'm not buying it. I don't think that an actor with the relationship that he obviously has with J.J. Abrams of his golden boy status in the industry that he has right now, I just don't think that he would be cast aside just because a few angry fans decided to. What are you doing?
That's the timer.
All right. Oh, you got to finish.
I'm just thinking about the listeners who are trying to skip this segment, and now they're back and they're listening to this. So I apologize to them.
Okay.
I also apologize to my family and my neighbors and the local clergy.
All right. We'll have more spoilers next week. Maybe. We'll see. We'll get to the... Oh, we've got one more we didn't get to. And I'm sure by the time next week rolls around, there'll be more. Going to wrap things up for this week's show. Big thanks to our sponsors, Storkside Toys and Little Debbie Snack Cakes. Got your toys and your snacks right there. What more do you need? If you'd like to play with us in between shows, we do encourage and appreciate that. You can do so by sending us an email, show@rebelforceradio.com. Also, our voicemail line, 708-320-1737. That's 708-320-1RFR. We are on Twitter at Rebel Force Radio. Jimmy can be found at Jimmy Mac Radio, and I can be found, cleverly enough, at Jason Swank, our Facebook page, where you'll find breaking news, links to all kinds of great stories, and just great conversation with, as we said, the smartest, the most well-learned, the most well-read, the most well-viewed Star Wars listening audience of any podcast, right there at facebook.com/Rebel Force Radio. iTunes, still probably the best repository of podcasts to be found anywhere. You can not only subscribe to each episode so you never miss one, but you can also write a review and help promote the show. We appreciate that. We just have one rule:
make it good.
And the official website, Rebel Force Radio.
www.thefoursradio.com. We do encourage you to listen and sample all of the podcasts, part of the Shot Glass Digital family of audio entertainment. That's at shotglassdigital.com. And also check Shot Glass out on Facebook at facebook.com/shotglassdigital. Rebel Force Radio can be heard just about each and every Saturday night on the internet radio station SR Sounds. That's 7 p.m. on srsounds.com. Oh, and speaking of Shot Glass Digital, how about a Rebel Force Radio shirt? Well, the place you can get them is shotglassdigital.com. So check that out. We got the holiday shopping season. It's going to be coming upon us. It's going to be here before you know it. We're already into September. We're past Labor Day. Man, oh, man, oh, man. Where did the summer go? It's over. It's over. But you know what? We only have one more summer to get through before the release of Episode 7. So it's a good thing when the time goes fast, when you're counting down the months to a new Star Wars movie. That's it for us, guys. We'll see you next time. Love you all so much. For Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.
Yeah.